Blog Talk Radio.
Working hard. may help you maintain, to learn to overcome the heartaches and pain. You got sick of kids, corrupt cops and crack rocks and stray shots, all in a block that stays hot. Leave it up to me while I be living proof to kick the truth to the young black youth. But shorty's running wild, smoking cess, drinking beer, and ain't trying to hear what I'm kicking in his ear. Neglect it for now, but yo, it got to be accepted that what? This life is hectic. Cash moves everything around me. Cream get the money. Dollar,
shit, I already had a damn number locked in.
Cash moves everything around me. Cream get the money. Dollar, dollar bill, yo. Cash moves everything around me.
Champion. Watch what I tell you, people. When everything's all F said and gone, we'll see who heads stick up. All right. I want to welcome everybody to the Shake and Bake Grudge Talk Show. Here, another Sunday. Oh, man. We had snow yesterday, brother. We had snow the day before. And here it is today, Sunday morning. It was still snow, but now it's all melted. Well, most of it. But from looking at the weather, we're supposed to get a little warm up this week. Not talking to the people in California, but to the people over here in the Midwest, we're supposed to get a little warm up. It's going, because we got, last night, we got down to 15 degrees. Ooh, that was cold. 15 degrees. I had to bring the dog in because it was a little too cold to be having a little brother sitting out there, a little sister sitting out there barking in that cold. Excuse me. But, yep, let's get the show going. Hold on one second, people. One quick second. Yeah, we're going to get the show going. We've got a special guest coming on today. The owner of CompuCar Nitro System, Big Ernie. Man, let me tell you, the owner of a CompuCar Nitro System, he has his own Nitro System, builds his own equipment, and he's bad, people. Let me tell you, Big Ernie's out there helping people win races. So by him being a friend of mine, I called Big Ernie and asked him to come on and talk to the fellas a little bit more about nitrous, because they know they get their cars together in the Midwest. Everybody else in the South is already together. But in the Midwest, they're getting their cars together. And they're trying to figure out what they should put on here. So it's best to catch them early and say, hey, Ernie said there's a CompuCar Nitro System that he has to offer. And what makes him stands above the rest, when you buy a Nitro System from the competitors, you buy it off the shelf, you take it home, and you don't see them no more. Well, Big Ernie says that you buy his system, you marry him. And by that, what I mean by that is you can call him. He's going to walk you through setting it up. He's going to walk you through tuning it, getting it on your system, getting it on your car, and helping you get from A to B. Now, if I don't consider that love, what is? And that's what you want when you buy something from somebody, people, and you strap it on and mess around and put it on wrong and blow up your engine. Because we all know nitrous destroys. I mean, nitrous get inside the engine and help it explode. The nitrous itself is not explosive, but it goes in the car and helps it explode even more. Gives you a whole hell of a lot more horsepower. So with that being said, putting the nitro system on your car is detrimental that you make sure you do everything right. And having Big Ernie on your side, on your team, to helping you get things together, that's a plus. There's other people out there, you call them, you get a answer service. Or they only just give you one word answers. Yeah? No? I don't know. Put that on there, and it might. Well, if you need some help, you wanna talk to somebody. And Big Ernie goes that extra mile. So with that being said, we're gonna have Big Ernie come on here I told him about 8:30. I should be looking forward to him. And Ernie's pretty punctual, so. In between that, we're gonna talk about some of this, that, and another. We're gonna talk about we've got some schedules that's been popped up for Milan, for Pour Your Own Puddle, Detroit Hood, Mike. We've got a schedule for Lapeer. So anybody else, we still need a schedule for US 42, 41, and a schedule for Martin, Michigan. And I think we don't have a schedule for Onondaga just yet. Well, I don't. If anybody has a schedule for each and every one of those, call and let me know or text it to me. And we can put it out there. So, before we get too far into the show. Well, we're going to start. We're going to open up some mics here and get our co-host in and operating. I'm still a little saddened because we lost the co-host and Brother Unknown a few weeks ago, but he's going to be missed. Trust me. If y'all don't miss him, I will. And the brother was a big part of the show. He's a big part of my life. And I hate to see people go, but that's part of life. And we have to just keep on moving and doing the best that he would want us to do. And, you know, his favorite word was, you got to look at the big picture. Got to look at the big picture. And that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to look at the big picture, which is getting everything together, like he said, set a goal and strive for it. Don't let nothing get in your way. Okay, with that being said, let's go ahead on and get the show popping. Get some people on here. We've got, what time is it? Okay, a few minutes after, 16 after. We're gonna kick the rules for about 15 minutes until we can get Big Ernie on here. And we're going to ask some Big Ernie some questions about this NYCHA system and anything that you got that you have a little problem with, feel free to ask him. All right, let's get the rolling. Let's get the rolling. Corey. Is that your hand up? Yep. What's going on, Corey?
Bro, what's happening? What's good with you?
I'm okay, man. I can tell you what the weather, I looked at the weather this week, Corey, and I seen some 50s, some 40s, 50s, and then Wednesday's supposed to be 60, and then Thursday's supposed to be 67. Ooh, I'm liking to hear that, Corey. I'm liking to hear that, and we in March.
No, I am too. It's starting to change. So
yes, sir.
Get it in season for me.
Yeah, man, when the weather starts to get nice, that kind of gears the people in the Midwest up. And we start getting things together.
Yes, sir. Name of the game. It's almost that time of year. My island about to open back up.
Yes.
Got something to look forward to.
Yeah, we got something we can we got a track we can go back to, which is closer for everybody in the city of Detroit. It's a lot closer. We still got Lapeer. We still got Ugly. We still got Martin, Michigan, and we got Onondaga. So we can't leave them out. And plus, we got 42 and 41. Those are the tracks we normally, people that's around us, we normally go to. We go to Chicago, 41. We go to Ohio, 42. Ubley, that's 2.5 hours up. Lapeer, and then we got Onondaga, Martin, Michigan, and Mila. So we got a little places to go. We just got to get ready so we can go play.
Man, that's it right there.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, sir. You get that picture I sent you through messenger?
About what? What was it about? I got a bunch of stuff from
the old timers in the picture.
It's probably on my phone.
Anderson Monkey posted it.
Did he?
But you had Cowboy, Dennis Shue. You had some people on there.
Man, back in the
Mr. Clean days.
Yeah, you remember Cowboy. He passed away. That was my boy.
Yeah, man.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. And you know what? I'm going to get Lamb, one of our photographers. I'm gonna get on his butt and have him make plenty of pictures when we go of everybody. And that way we can have it, you know, and it shouldn't cost us nothing. It's just something we can keep on our walls or put in our photo album. Because some of these pictures people got, and then if they pass away, they get destroyed and disappear, and we won't have no records of it.
Yes, sir. Yeah.
Rich, your mic is open.
Yeah, I'm here.
Come on in, Rich.
What's happening?
Just trying to get shit around so I can get out and get tested.
I know that's right, man. I know that's right. It's gonna open up for us in a minute, Brother Rich. I'm sitting here typing something on the phone. Yeah, it's gonna open up for us in a minute. Well, our weather gonna be good in a minute.
Yeah, for sure. A couple of days of 60s and rain, and then back into the 40s, but.
Yeah.
Still in a couple of weeks. I mean, we got to get some warm weather and get the roads cleaned off. And
some rain going to come down and rain on our parade, and then after that rain, we should be ready.
Yep.
We should be ready. Oh, I haven't done this in a while. So I gotta get this going. Well, he needs no introduction, ladies and gentlemen. He gets his own because he go back with me for a long time. But straight out of California, hey, we got my brother from another mother, Teo. What's going on, Teo?
What's going on, everyone? What's going on? I guess you guys are having a little cold spell out there, huh?
Yeah, you can call
That's
it
all
that.
Good,
Teo. Yeah, it's been yo-yoing here, Teo.
Did you say 15, like 1-5?
Yeah, no other numbers but 1 and a 5. It got down to 15 degrees the other night. And, man, well, last night.
One.
Man, that's cold. That's cold.
Man, I don't even think I have a thermometer that registers that low.
In your refrigerator, it gets that low, Tail.
No, I keep that at a cool 45, 46. When it,
all right.
When
all
it gets
right.
to 80
we'll,
degrees,
stick,
when
all
it
right.
gets
we'll stick
about
his
80
head
degrees,
in the freezer,
I just
car.
Shove my head in there.
That's all he got to do. I know. We're just going to blow it at his front door. He was like, damn.
Right.
Oh,
front door. And back door. Back door, too, in case he try to get smart and run out the back. And we're gonna have Rich posted up at the window, so just in case.
When it started hailing out here, I told everybody, don't get away from the door. They're out there. Don't open the door.
He's like, call out there.
He's going to be like the Three Stooges. He's going to be like the Three Stooges. I'm going to open the door and get a pie in my face. I'm getting away from the door. They're out there.
Yeah.
The hail's just a warning. They got snow with them.
And you know what, Teo? They get hailstorms in the south, and we hardly ever get them up here. But down south, in my neck of the woods, right in Arkansas, my brother do body work, and he be getting them hail damage, man, and he clean up off of it. Them ice balls be coming down, putting dents in people's cars. They be cleaning up on those.
Yeah, it's like if somebody got a bunch of little rocks and just started pouring them off the roof or something, man. They come down and hit, and then they stay on the ground for a little bit, too.
Yes, sir. Well, that's that weather. I got a phone call the other day. Oh, man, I just mentioned and broke up. I got two phone calls that they was getting some snow down south. And that was, let's see, that was Friday that they got some snow in my hometown, which a few days ago it was 71 degrees. And then they turn around and got some snow. So this weather is waking everybody up all over the country.
Wow.
Yeah, there's a friend of mine that headed down towards Kentucky and Tennessee this last weekend so they could do some testing. They got about halfway down there and rethought, turn around, come home.
Yeah, and what's so funny about it, Rich, it'll start snowing or hailing down there, and then 30, 45 minutes later, it cleared the heck up. It's gone. Or the next day, it's gone.
Yeah, but it still ain't warm.
It's strange. It's strange down there. It is strange. But whatever it is and wherever it's at, I recommend y'all keep your jackets on, keep your neck covered, because when it warm up 1 minute and then turn cold the next, you're subject to get flu, colds, and sickness. So just stay wrapped up. It's what I've learned over the years. Stay wrapped up. You talked to Brent, Rich.
I sent him a couple text messages earlier today, and he responded, so I know he's around. But I haven't talked to him.
Yeah.
He was supposed to come out and get some race fuel this weekend, but he didn't make it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I seen something he had posted about one of his friends died, and I told him he can come on the show, and we have a memorial service for him if he want. He got back with me, so he might be taking it kind of hard.
I didn't see nothing about that, so I don't know who it was.
Well, so what's on your agenda for the year, Corey?
So what's on the
agenda? Everybody,
I had to come off mute.
Yeah. Why you go on mute? You got a bunch of news and noise in the background?
No, I had to take care of something real quick. I'm gonna be hitting mine. Let me hit some different little racetracks. Travel out of town a little bit.
Okay. You planning on going to Bobby Cole's race?
Oh no, I ain't making it. I wish I could. Like I got a pump.
Yeah, that's going to be the last week of April. Plus, it's supposed
Man,
to be 3
nice.
Days, I think. Huh?
Yeah. I was saying that would be a nice race to make too, but nah. I ain't going racing to May.
Okay,
to get
I understand. I understand, bro. I understand. I'm doing the same thing, trying to get things in order. Because I can't wait to get back out here and do some show and tell.
Yes, sir. I might go find mine at Saturday. You know, my birthday Saturday, sir. So.
Oh, this coming Saturday?
Oh, damn.
Yeah.
Okay, congratulations. How young will you be?
Haha, I ain't putting that on here.
What you scared of? What you scared of, Corey? People knowing your age?
You sound quiet.
I know, I don't care about a normal age.
You're still just a kid, Corey. You ain't even that old, so you ain't got to start worrying about
that. Alright, all they need to know is shoot. Alright, I'm in my 30s. That's all y'all need to know. No, I think
like
you got 30, 36,
man.
Though.
You're still
here.
You're
trying to play to my age.
Don't ever be afraid to tell your age.
Oh, no, I ain't never afraid to tell my age. I was just messing around. No, I'll be 36.
Is that what you said, Corey? You're going to be 36?
Yeah.
Like, you're only 4 years older than my son. You're still a kid.
Yeah.
Yeah, I am.
Hey, Corey, let me tell you, when I was a lot younger, the old school's always going to rub your nose in this shit. They always. No matter what they do, it's like they got one up on us, you know. And they going to say, oh, boy, you still wet behind the ears. Listen, they going to say, boy, you still wet behind the ears. Oh, boy, you just a little pee inside a puddle. And I used to be, like, mad, but then I was like, he right. I am young. But it'll come a day when you'll be up there, and then you can rub them kids behind you nose in the shit. So, all right. I'm not afraid to tell my age.
No, I ain't even.
And I'm getting up there. Shit, I'm almost catching up with Tato.
Easy, you're older than me. I'm not the oldest one on this show.
No,
you're not.
You got.
I can promise you that.
The heat in California where you were at, Tao, makes you older, man. It dries you out. It starts to prune you.
No, we got this ocean here. I just go dip in the water real quick and come back out. I'm good.
Oh,
either one of you even
now,
pushing 60 yet? Or 50? Either one of you pushing 50 yet?
Yeah, I done pushed past it.
Yeah. You get to that 60 mark?
Push past it.
Yeah, we're breaking that ice right now.
Are you?
Yeah.
Well, then maybe I ain't the oldest one out here for a change.
Yeah, you right behind me, ain't you, Rich?
I'll be 58 in August.
God damn. Shit. I was born in 1961. I was born in 1961. That makes me 61 years old. God.
Yep.
Where did time go?
God damn, I knew there was something I liked about this show. The only fucking show I get on that I'm not the old man.
Right. The senior citizen show. That's what we're going to call this, the senior citizen show.
Oh, man. Quit it.
God damn.
I mean, you know, like all the guys I'm racing with on the Team Nobody event, you know, for the TV show we're doing down in Illinois. Everybody on that team, I'm 58, Jeff is like 56, and everybody else is in their 30s, maybe 40.
Ooh.
You know, it's like,
Youngster. Yeah,
we're the elder statesmen. It's like, son of a bitch. But they all good at what they do. That's why we're all together.
Mm-hmm. See, we're that group now where we say back in the day.
Yeah.
Right.
We're all that age now. We walked uphill both ways, home to school and home.
Hell yeah. No.
The old timers now.
It's always good, though. Rich, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's always good to be around some old timers. You learn something.
Yeah. Well, I'm always willing to teach, but, you know, as long as I can get up over that door bar and I keep doing what I'm doing, age is just a number. Because once
right.
I get strapped in,
right.
I ain't much smarter than I was when I was 18, so.
Right, right.
As long as that bitch is
still
pointed in the right direction, we're going.
Yeah, it's still there. You just did it more times than them youngsters.
Hell, I've had my car.
When I was young, I'm not a kid anymore, but some days I wish I was a kid again.
My fucking car's older than some of the guys I'm racing with.
Yep. Oh, boy. Well,
when were you born,
Okay, when was I born?
Yeah, if you're 86. 86?
1986. Good.
son of a bitch. My car is 3 years older than you are. There you go. Prime example.
Damn.
I've owned my car 86. As long as Corey's been alive.
Mm-hmm.
God damn it, we're old.
Well, that's what the old folks get a chance to speak and talk about, Rich. We see things a lot different than the youngsters. Youngsters are looking at their feet. We kind of looking ahead.
Now, youngsters nowadays ain't doing nothing but looking at their damn phone. They missing all kinds of
I told Tao this, but I don't think I told y'all. I was driving my tow truck down 7 Mile one day, and I was about to make a left turn, and there was this young girl walking down the sidewalk looking at her phone, and she damn near walked right in front of the truck looking at her phone. That's how they are.
Well, that life's going by, and they ain't even paying attention.
Mm-mm.
It's crazy.
That's why I wanted one of those train horns for my truck, just to blast that sucker.
I got one.
And them suckers loud, too.
Oh,
yep,
man.
I got to set up train air horns for underneath my dually for this year.
You got them already? Which one did you get? Because I want to get some, Rich. I just don't know what brand to get. Because you see them on Facebook, and then a buddy of mine got one. He said, they sound like shit. They're like just horns. I want that trade horn you can hear 5 miles away. That's what I want.
I still got the box out in the garage. Next time I'm in the shop, I'll try to dig it out and take a picture of it. It should have the part number and the company and everything right on the end of it. There's two horns.
Did you test them out?
What's that?
Did you test them out?
Oh, yeah. Dumbest thing I ever did was test them inside my shop.
And yeah, they are
loud,
man.
Air compressor or no?
What's that?
Yeah, air compressor also?
No, they're electric. They're electric air horns.
Oh, they're electric.
They've got a little, I don't know, some kind of box. Maybe it's got a little compressor in it or something, but it's a set of two horns. One's longer than the other, so it gives you that.
Yeah, right.
And they're actually chrome, and you can mount them on top of your cab if you want, but.
We'll see out here in California. They might be a little illegal if it goes over a certain decibel. So I'd have to put them under the truck.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. I want to say that the Longhorn is 14 or 16 inches long, and the other one's like 12. I mean, ain't little.
Oh, wow.
But
yeah, I definitely want to get one for my truck.
Well, and that's the thing, pulling the big trailer and all that shit. You don't want somebody start to pull out in front of you and you have a whole little horn that sounds like you're driving a Toyota. That doesn't get their attention.
I can't even hear it.
Yeah. I want to get their attention. They realize that truck's not going to stop.
It sure will wake up a person, though, that's for sure. It'll get their attention.
Yep. And it hooks right up to your regular horn button, too, where you unplug the horn that's in your fender, and that hooks to your box, so you don't have any wiring to do or none of that shit other than just the horns.
Right. It'll definitely get their attention.
Yeah, they weren't cheap. They weren't some of these $29 or $49 horns. I want to say I paid $120 bucks for these things.
And you want something
as long
that's
as
loud.
That
you don't...
As long as they're loud.
Yeah.
Or I just want them loud. Or rattle conclude this. You know, you get these kids that walk real slow in front of your car in the crosswalk.
Yeah.
You're the living piss out of them.
Yeah, where they throw their phone 16 feet away and be like, what the hell was that?
Yeah. Yeah, I'll try to find that box. I know it's still out there, Dale, so.
All right. Yeah, let me know. Because I've seen some of them with the air compressor with the four trumpets on it, the four horns.
Yep.
And I'm like, you know, loud.
Actually, one is loud enough, but they normally come with two. And
oh no, gotta have an echo. Gotta have an echo.
Yeah, that extra one, cause on my semi truck, it's got two. And but it takes a lot more air pressure than what the electric ones will kick out.
Yeah, I think you'll be happy with them.
I have those up switches in my truck. I might even have to put one under the trailer and then have it wire into the up switch inside the truck and just blast the little blast when I'm backing up.
Whatever works for you. And they definitely sure do work.
Well, I just hooked up reverse lights on my trailer. So might need a little bit more than just that. No, actually, no, it wasn't. So what I did was, so the lights I have on my trailer, they're those long LEDs. They've got the 11 lights in them.
Yep.
I got the white lights.
Mm-hmm.
I got the white lights just like those. And what I did was I have four brake lights around the thing, and then I put the white lights in the middle of the two red ones. But then I put another one on the side of the trailer on the bottom corners. So when I go into reverse, those light up the sides so I can see when I'm backing up. It'll light up
mm-hmm.
everything. No, it was just one
That's
wire.
That's a good idea.
One wire. It's one wire, and I just ran all the way back off the the trailer.
Yeah.
The trailer hitch and just ran from the trailer all the way back and just tied that in. And then, ground it, and they work good.
Now, what'd you do? Is it part of your normal trailer pigtail?
Yes.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Because my pigtail's got the six rounds.
You should have seven. Yeah, mine's round. It's got the seven plug. So it would be, well, depending on how... The wiring should still all be the same. You'll see I got to remember. It'll be a single wire by itself. And it's usually capped. It's a blue wire. Blue or yellow, I can't remember, because I did some wiring. And all I did was just tap into that and ran the wire all the way under. And I ran it through the loom, all with with the light wires, all the little hoops on the trailer.
Yeah.
All the way to the back, and then tied it in, and then ran it across and tied it in for the other side.
And I'll have to look at mine and see if I can do that on mine, because I'd like to do the same thing.
Yeah,
some of these places
it should say on
hey,
your.
Hey, Rick.
Yeah.
On your trailer hitch, where your pigtail is at, you have the big one like the semi trucks.
No, it's just a round, six or seven prong with a big 12 volt in the middle.
Yeah, it should be an extra one in there. It should be an extra two in there.
Extra
that
two.
That you're not using. Yeah. Because you really need five wires. Actually, you really need four for your lights, for your backup lights, turn signals.
You got your brake lights, turn signals. And then I've got one that charges a 12-volt battery.
You should have at least one left over, one or two left over in that round, depending on what kind you got. Because the one in the center, you got it as the hot wire?
I believe that's what it is, yeah.
A hot wire or either the ground, one of the two, depending on how people wire them up.
The ground is in one of the plugs. The hot wire is the big one.
Yes. So you'd have your running lights, brake lights, both two signals, a ground wire, and then I've got the center 12-volt. It seems like one of the other small wires in the plug is just a 12-volt that actually goes inside and feeds the trailer brakes, or the wiring inside the trailer, and the center 12-volts for the trailer brakes.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's two 12-volts. So, yeah, if I got the 7-prong, there should still be one empty.
Yeah.
Just wire that into my backup lights on the truck. That's a goddamn good idea, Tail. Especially with them on the side like that in the back.
Because
at nighttime when you're trying to see and backing up in around the corner and nobody to help you, you need that light.
Well, and there's a lot of times when I'm in Mexico, there's not a whole lot of street lights and stuff, so.
Oh, yeah.
It's a really good idea.
Yeah,
Tail. One more thing to put to my list.
No problem, man. No, listen, it wasn't hard to do, but you can't use those oval lights because those have to be inset for the side. But the ones that I use, I just put a what you call it in. I think it might have been a half inch hole I drilled. So where the wire part of it is, it sticks in, and then I just put the two screws in, and that holds it in, and then I go on the inside of the trailer and run the wire.
Yeah, like a clearance light, but with clear lenses.
Yeah. I think if you Google reverse LED backup lights, you'll see the strips. They got the 11 LEDs in them. And then when you wire it up, you'll have three wires on it. You'll have a black one, a white one, and then you have a green one, which is, they use for ground. And the black and white, one is for like a running light. The other one is actually to make it brighter, like if you stepped on the brake kind of thing, even with the white lights.
Right.
So I just have it on the brightest one. So when I put it in reverse,
I'm definitely, because I still got to wire up all my outside lights, my spotlights and shit for the side of the trailer at the track, and I'm actually got a light that I got to wire up for the back if we can't park next to it. I got a swing out light that comes out the back door, and I got to wire all that shit up, so that's just one more wire to run, but it ain't that big a deal. And I think Napa's got those LED backup lights on the shelf or on the wall down there here in town. So them LED ones.
Yeah. And what I did was, from where my trailer's at, when I back up, when I come back home, it's completely dark. And I got to, ride the foot brake so I could just see how far I am from the fence. What it is I can't see my tire marks because I just keep driving over my same tire marks, so I know where I'm exactly where I need to be.
Right.
And after I put those white lights on, it was daylight. I could see exactly where I was at.
Yep. Oh, I'm definitely. I mean, you convinced me. I will. Like I say, it's just one more light but 1, 2, 3, 4 more lights and one more wire to run. So we'll damn sure get them put in.
Yeah, and you could lay it down or stand it up top, whichever way, your preference is.
Well, and I might even get the best ones that go in. the rubber ones.
Those oval
ones?
Just,
you cut a hole, you push it in, and it, the rubber is the mount, and it's just got the LED lights in the middle. They're like,
yeah,
I don't know, the size of a small grapefruit, or not a small grapefruit, but a small orange.
Yeah, those, I have those on my, for my blinker above my wheel well on the trailer.
Yeah.
And I was just, because, you know, if you got to, you know, I just didn't want to do that. I just did the long ones because it was easier and I less cutting. I was just drilling a hole and then putting the light in there, putting the screws in it, and it was already set.
Right.
So it worked out good for me. I can't complain.
Well, that's the only reason I said something about doing the recessed ones, because everything else on the trailer is like that. And then
okay.
But I was talking, I'd like to put more running lights on my trailer, period. There's only two on each side, along the top and shit, like you said, one on the fender. You can't hardly see the trailer when you're going down the freeway.
I'm going to send you what mine looks like. This is before I put the reverse lights on it. Let me see. That's when I got it. And
but yeah, definitely something I definitely want to do now. And I'm sure after the guys in Mexico see it, they'll be like, "Hell yeah, that works for him. We're gonna have to do it on ours."
Yeah.
I'll probably even do it on my open trailer that's, I'm going to pull my Colorado with the Malibu on it.
Oh, okay.
Probably put a set on that too so that I can see you to back that up. But you got Eugene on yet there, Shake? I think he left us.
Which
you've already clicked on.
I'm sending this to you right now, Rich.
All right.
Oh. Okay, hey, I'm back. I had to make a phone call. Okay. We were gonna do a memorial for Brent, but he might come on a little later because Brent's always at work doing things, and then he gets on kind of late. But we'll do that a little later. First and foremost, we're gonna see if we can get Ernie, from CompuCar Nitro System on the show, and Ernie's gonna talk to us a little bit more about his products, about Nitro Systems, and how to tune them. If we can get a question or two out of him about tuning the Nitro System. With that being said, with less further ado, we're going to go to Ernie's at the door. All right. Big Ernie, your mic
is
open. How you doing? How you doing, bro?
Man, it was a good day today. It was 60 degrees, light winds. Yesterday, it's supposed to be 32 tonight and 65 tomorrow. Hey, it's a good weekend.
Hey, Ernie, can you send some of that up here?
Yeah, I'll put some in a box tomorrow, and I'll UPS it up to you.
All right, make sure you put it in one of them reefer trucks, man, so it stays nice and cold.
Well, I tell you what, I just put my phone outside and let you listen to it.
All right. Matter of fact, never mind. I'll be down there. Give me a couple of days. I'll
okay.
be down there.
Hey guys,
what's been
this, is Ernie with this is Ernie with CompuCar Nitrous Oxide Systems. Hoping y'all having a good weekend. You know, our deal is if we can help you with anything, tune-ups, parts, pieces, that's what we're here for. We're one of the oldest nitrous companies in the United States. We've been around for about 50 years. And we do more custom stuff than a lot of people do. And we're always here. If you need us, all you got to do is give us a call, and we'll walk you through it. Our solenoids have a lifetime warranty. So if you've ever had to buy solenoids before, you know what that warranty means. If you've got a direct port system, you got four solenoids, that's close to $600-$700 worth of solenoids. So we got the lifetime warranty. And we've got a lot. Yeah, we do direct ports. We do plates. We do multi-stage plates. We do hidden systems. Anything you want. We'll, if it's got a spark plug and a spark, we make a nitrous system for it. And custom build a system any way you want it. We'll put it together your specs, not our specs. And then we will make sure that your tune-up is correct. And, you know, appreciate Shake having me on tonight. One of the big things with nitrous, where they're, I'm going to say it's just kind of information that's been left over for years, and it's kind of a bad information. And I talk to every racer that calls in, is a simple question on your nitrous tune-up in your motor. If you can turn your nitrous off, can you make a decent pass through the eighth of a mile? Oh, yeah, people go, well, hell yeah, what the hell? Well, the old adage of get the car running right and then adding nitrous to it is wrong. That's old information. Old information. If you spend money to have a motor dynoed, okay, number one, the only thing you want to dyno on your motor, crank it up, let it warm up, shut it down, go out there and look, is anything leaking? Did anything fall off? If it didn't leak and it ain't falling off, that's all you want, is just to break in the motor. I don't care about 8,000, 9,000, 10,000 RPM tune-ups. That's the way you make a normally aspirated motor, not a nitrous motor. The tune-up starts at the carburetor. So if you've got your motor dynoed, and I don't care what they charge you to dyno it, when you pick that motor up, it's wrong. Unless you are dynoing the nitrous and everything on your car, you're running rich. And then you're going to start using your nitrous to tune your motor. You're going to use your fuel pressure. You're going to change the nitrous jet. You're going, well, I got this cylinder's richer than that one, and I've got to change jet. A system that is set up properly is not going to have hot and cold cylinders. If you have hot and cold cylinders, where is all that excess fuel coming from? We give you a nitrous jet and a fuel jet, and we tell you, let's just as a number, let's say 3228 on direct ports. We want 5.5 pounds of fuel pressure. That's a pretty much standard setup for us. Now, what we've got to look at is, what motor do you have? Okay, you got a 441. You got a Dominator on it. Okay, that's great. Now, what jets do you have in that Dominator? How big is that Dominator? Oh, I've got 96s in mine. Way too big. You got to remember that when you're spraying nitrous into a motor, you're spraying 950 PSI positive pressure blowing into that motor. Behind that 950 PSI, it creates a vacuum through the carburetor. That vacuum through the carburetor causes more air to go across the jets. That causes more fuel to be pulled out of the carburetor. So now you've got this massive amount of raw fuel coming through your carburetor, falling out of suspension, hitting the intake runners, and then going down to the runners and dropping into cylinders. That's one reason why we
I mean to interrupt you, Big Ernie.
Go ahead.
I don't mean to interrupt you, but when that situation happened like that, where all that raw fuel going down there into the combustion chamber, did that cause the ring lands to raise?
Yes. Anytime you take a motor apart and the rings are lifted, pinched, or backsided the pistons, that's because the motor's too rich. And we've got to get the motor under control. So we want to take that excess fuel out of the carburetor so we're not having to fight it on the other end of the track. Like I say, your tune-up always starts at your carburetor. So you say, well, I ordered this carburetor, and that carburetor man told me I needed a 1,300 CFM to go with this 441-inch motor. No, you don't. With nitrous, you're creating more vacuum than the motor can handle. So if you put a bigger carburetor on there, you're going to suck so much air through that carburetor that you're going to be flooding the motor worse. So now you start really changing your jetting. I've seen intakes come in that had a 15-jet spread. I've seen plates come in that had a 30-jet spread. Okay, that's telling me that you've got way too much fuel coming through the top of your motor. And the fuel coming through the carburetor at that point is being sucked through, so it's not atomizing. It's falling through. It's raining inside of your motor. And that's where you start hurting pistons. So when you work with our equipment, first thing we want to know is, well, you know, Shake, you heard me the other day talking to a gentleman. I want to know the cubic inches, the carburetor, the jets. I want to know what type of ignition you're running. Are you got a crank trigger? What spark plugs are you running? What gap are you running? Everything. Also with nitrous, you don't need extremely large heads. You know, if you've got, here again, let's go back to the 441-inch motor. If you've got 400 CFM head, they're too big. That's great for normally aspirated, but with nitrous, it's not, because with the bigger heads, you've reduced the velocity through the intake runners. We've got to keep them not closed up. We do need some size to them, but we don't need massive. We've got to keep the fuel in suspension. If it falls out of suspension, you have a problem. When you port and polish an intake, it used to be the thing, we wanted that thing to look like a mirror. That's ported and polished. The problem is we found after building a Lexan intake and watching the fuel, we saw the fuel sticking to the runners. So we went in there and roughed the runners up, and that roughness causes the fuel that's coming through the intake runners to get up on the tip of those sharp edges and get back in the airflow. So you don't have raw fuel going into the motor. And, you know, that's just where we're starting on the tune-up. The tune-up with us is going to take, when you get our equipment, whether it's a direct port or a plate or two-stage plate, Mad Dog series, we want you, when you get it on your motor, you call us. And then we're going to walk you through everything. I can tell you on the phone when you buy it, but I'd rather tell you when you got it in your hands. And that way, you know exactly where we're at. And
Ernie,
most of y'all probably know. Yes, sir.
I don't. When you were talking about the intake runners, when they come from the factory, they usually had them little. You see the rough surface inside the intake when they first made it. And then you said when we was trying, or when y'all was trying to intake that with the smooth runners and porting and polish it, that created a problem. Is that what you said?
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Now I can understand what you're saying. When with that rough surface on there, it causes the fuel to atomize before it go into the cylinders?
It causes any fuel that's on the runners to get back into the airflow, so you don't have the raw fuel going directly into the motor.
Because you always want that mist going inside the cylinders.
Exactly. Do a port match.
Gotcha.
More than anything else is more important than trying to go in there and hog out an intake. That's the main thing is port match. If you've got some relief you didn't want to put it, you need to put it in there or something like that, that's great. But you got to remember, we're working with positive pressure in an intake, not vacuum, when you're spraying nitrous. And we had a, I was working with a dragster at House of Hook, Carolina Dragway, and we had put a direct port on his dragster. He did his burnout. He backs up, stages in, and does a 525 pass. He comes back. He said, why didn't it go faster than that? I said, because here's your throttle linkage. It fell off on the starting line. He did a 525 pass on the nitrous only with the butterfly's cones. That tells you the amount of power your nitrous system has. And theoretically, if you get your combination right, a one-barrel carburetor can run as fast as a four-barrel carburetor because you're putting fuel and air into the motor. The motor doesn't know where it comes from. It just has to be in the right ratio. And that ratio is what's critically important.
So when I was a kid, that experience happened with me. I had a Chevy 400 small block, came in a 1970 Impala, and I took the four barrel off and put a two barrel on there, and I was beating the guys in the neighborhood. They say, pop your hood. When I showed them on my hood, man, you got something else on here. You got something else on here. Ain't no two barrel supposed to beat a four barrel. So what you're saying is that two barrel changed the air fuel going inside the engine, made it run better.
A two barrel will produce more torque off the starting line than a four barrel will. A four barrel, one of the problems you have is when you leave the starting line, you're on the two step, your butterflies are wide open. Now, when you release that button, if you're not maintaining enough velocity through those runners, the car will fall on its face, you get a stumble, then it picks up and runs. Usually when you see that stumble, you can automatically go to the car and go, your jetting is too big, or you've got a power valve in there. Drag cars, you do not want a power valve. You need extended jets on the back, properly jetted, and then the car is going to run good. Now, go ahead. I'll let you ask a question if you got it, and then we'll go back to something else. Back to you, sir.
You answered it, because when I was a kid, I always wondered why that happened. But because back in them days, a lot of guys was always talking about, go bigger this, go bigger. Even I had one guy went and got him a big block, 454, and we and him raced, and I used to run circles around him. And at a young age, I didn't understand why. So I just stayed with small blocks. I always thought small block was the numero uno. But as I got older, combination.
Yeah. Combination is the deal. And the proper motor combination is where you win. The guy with the biggest motor doesn't necessarily win. It's the guy that's got his combination best together.
Mm-hmm.
Whether you're running a big block or a small block, if you're making a big block with 1,000 horsepower or a small block with 1,000 horsepower, which one's making more power? Hey, they're both making 1,000 horsepower. Horsepower is horsepower. The biggest difference is, and that's another thing about compact car, we don't want to necessarily talk about horsepower. We're looking at torque.
Torque.
Torque is what wins the race. Torque gets you off the starting line. So we want to put on the starting line what your combination, your street, your tires, gear, ratio, transmission, is best to get the car to launch. If we get a little bit too much in there, it wants to fry the tires, okay, we'll back it up a little bit. No big problem there. But then once the car is in motion, we'll turn on the second stage. And that's just, we'll talk about the Mad Dog two-stage plate. It's adjustable from, we can go all the way down to 50 horsepower, but it normally comes with jetting 175 to 400 horsepower per stage. So we can
Mad Dog is the system that you sell?
Yes, Mad Dog is our full competition name for Mad Dog Willie Jr. Dog. And the reason why we've gotten, I'm going to give you a little story behind why it's named Dog. I mean, the Mad Dog series is Dog came over to the shop. I told Dog I wanted to sponsor him. and I wanted him to try a new piece of equipment, this plate that I'd been working on. Okay, he agreed to it. So I went out on his car, took his carburetor off. He had four stages of nitrous. He had a two-stage crossbar plates, and he was running 104.99 jets in each one of those. And he had two stages of direct port, and he was running big jets in those. So I disconnected all that. I put on the Mad Dog plate, single stage. It was set up for dual stage, but I only put a single stage in there because I didn't want to. He was already mad enough by the time I got everything done. And I told him to go to the track, call me, and let me know what he did. About 2 hours later, he calls me and says, "Ernie, I just went 0.3 of a second faster than I've ever been on four stages." I said, "Well, you just went that fast, and the combination that you're running is a 7370. So we took out all those 104 nitrous jets and all those big direct port jets and went to a 7370 on one stage. He went 0.3 of a second faster. I changed the carburetor jets. I changed everything in it to where I wanted it. I set the timing. I set the retard on it. And then I phased the distributor." And if a lot of y'all may have heard of phasing distributors, or you have another definition of phasing a distributor. We developed phasing distributors in the 90s. And what it is if you've got a motor, and we're just going to use round numbers here because they're easier to remember. Let's say you're running a 30-degree timing and you're going to pull out 10 degrees. Well, right now you shoot your timing. Yes, it's 30. I'm going to put a 10-degree in the box. I'm ready to go. No, you're not. Remember, the rotation of the motor never stops. So at 30 degrees, the rotor button is lined up directly with the number one tower spark plug. Now, you activate your nitrous, and it says, "We've got to pull out 10 degrees. What happens? The box tells the ignition at 30 degrees, don't fire. We've got to wait 10 degrees. So the rotor button goes past the tower 10 degrees, and then it sparks backwards. So you've got an air gap, and the rotor button is running away from the cylinder. You've got that air gap that it's firing backwards to get to the spark plug. So you start losing spark at your spark plug. Under a heavy load of nitrous and compression in your cylinders, the spark plug can go out. That's when you'll start seeing backfires on the big end of the track. Or it says, the thing about electricity is it always seeks the least path of resistance. So if you've got all this built up in the cylinder and it's trying to fire backwards, and then all of it says, "Hey, look, over at number 8, that cylinder's nice and soft. Let's fire over there." So get your intake valve is open. It's drawing a charge of fuel and nitrous into it, and then it sparks over and lights that cylinder. That's when it takes the top of your motor off. So you've got to get all the stuff right. So a quick way of telling you how to set it, you pull your motor around to 30 degrees. Take a credit card or a driver's license. Set your air gap. They happen to be the right thickness. And I never have a feeler gauge with me that's the right thickness. So your driver's license or credit card is about 80 thousandths. Perfect. Set your air gap. Now, we're going to pull out 10 degrees. And you got 10 degrees in your box. Pull your motor from 30 degrees to 20 degrees. Go up and loosen up your distributor. Rotate it to the rotor button is in the hole on the number one tower. Lock it down. Now you have phased your distributor with the amount of timing that you have pulled out. So when you crank the car up and you shoot it, you're going to show 30 degrees. When you activate the nitrous, you're going to show 30 degrees, but you shoot your cap, you're not going to see your rotor button. That's fine. It's 10 degrees behind the number one. But as soon as you hit, turn your button loose, it is instantly on the number one. It's making power, and you're pulling all the way down the track with the best spark and ignition that you can have. If you don't do that, you're going to be running richer on the big end. The motor's going to start loading over at about 500 foot, and then you're just going to be making noise to the eighth of a mile. Back to you, sir.
Whoa. You notice how everybody get quiet when you talk, Ernie? You be talking. You like E.F. You like E.F. Hutton. When you speak, everybody listens.
Well, you know, I'm open for any questions from anybody. And I've raced everything that you can race, except boats. I don't like boats. But anything
else,
like everything up. No, I found out you don't have to drown to go racing. You can hit a wall or you can catch on fire, but drowning is not one of the things. But, you know, I've spent a lot of time with some of the best people that you can work with. Oh, we got a guest?
Okay. Yeah, we got a guest. 248-3885. Who we got, caller?
Big Carter.
How you doing, Mr. Carter?
Yeah.
Hey, Papa
How's
Bear,
going,
what's happening, my man?
I hate to holler at my buddy, honey. Yeah, it's been a while, man.
Y'all know what I'm telling
you, man?
Oh, man, we've
oh,
been
man.
Knowing each other
yeah.
for a long time. Honey been helping me with my nudges and whatnot. Oh, man, he's one of my buddies. We've been cool for a long time.
Yeah,
oh, I didn't know
Papa Bear and Papa Bear and Mike. Good, great guys.
Yeah.
Oh, you
hey,
get around,
baby, going, honey. I was listening to you explaining that Nigel to the guys.
Yeah, do you think they understand it?
Oh, yeah, they're going to pick up on it. I did a long time ago. You helped me out. I think I bought
well,
a couple of Illinois.
The main thing was is to get a lot of the old information out of people's heads. And
right.
I don't care who's tuning your car. You know, they may be putting the same tune-up that they've been putting in cars for 20 years. If you don't catch up with the tune-up, then you're running behind. So, you can go out there and with the right tune-up, and you're not going to hurt parts. Now, I say that, but we'll go back to Willie Dog. On Dog's car, Smokey, we had 200 passes on his spark plugs. 200 passes
wow.
on his spark plugs. On the car he's driving now, we're at over 150 passes on his spark plugs. If you're not hurting spark
Mr. Carr,
plugs,
Mr. Carr,
you
Mr.
gotta
Carr,
go
turn
run.
Your TV down. Turn your TV down.
Okay, gotcha.
You know, if you just look at the cost of spark plugs and you say he's made 350 passes on two cars with two sets of spark plugs, one in each set, and it's not hurting anything, that means you've got a good combination. The thing of having to change spark plugs every pass, spark plugs have gotten ridiculously expensive. So if you don't have to change them, and there's no reason for you to change the spark plugs unless you're having problems.
What plugs are you guys running in your car?
Somebody's TV in the background. Okay, go ahead.
I don't know.
What was the question?
Go ahead. Go ahead, Rich.
What brand plug? What plugs are you running in that car?
NGKs. You know, in his car, we're running NGK9s. And another thing is the gap you run on your spark plugs. Your spark plugs should be gapped between 22 to 25. And the MSD6 is a good street strip ignition. But when you're getting in combination, the MSD6, I don't care if it's a 6D, L, whatever you got, it will not work in a hard competition motor. you're going to have a minimum of 7 AL. If you've got a grid, that's great. It'll work with everything you're doing. But if you've got a 7, 7531, you'll run it. That's great.
Why you say that, Ernie? You need a 7 AL or better.
Well, MSD 6 box is a good street ignition, but under heavy cylinder pressure and the amount of fuel and everything that you're putting into that motor, as that cylinder pressure builds up, the 6 doesn't produce enough amperage to fire the spark plug in a heavy load. So you get out on the big end of the track and your candles start going out. And you're just making noise. But as your candles go out, that means the cylinders are running rich. If they run rich, you run a heavy chance of pinching rings, lifting rings, hurting a piston.
That hey, honey.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, sir.
Big Carter. I got NGK 10s. I run NGK 10s with nitrous. Is that a good plug for running 4 stages of nitrous?
Absolutely. The spark plug you're running is regulated by the cubic inch of the motor, the amount of compression you're running, how much nitrous are you running. The heavier load of nitrous that you're running, like if you go from a 9 to a 10. Now, very few motors need an 11. Those that need 11 are turbocharged, supercharged, blower, super high compression, 15.5, 16-to-1 motors that are trying to run nitrous. Then I would say, yes, you might need an 11. But other than that, 11s are too cold. You get too cold with a spark plug, you set to have a problem with it fouling out. And I get people that call me and they say, well, you know, I put out my spark plugs and they look like they're brand new. Okay. If they look like they're brand new, you may be too rich. And what you're doing is not burning all the fuel. It's washing the spark plug out. And when you pull it out, it looks like it's brand new, just like you took it out of the box. If it looks like it's almost blistered looking, you're lean. But a good burn on a spark plug is light cardboard brown.
Yeah.
Put it on and go.
Uh-huh.
Back to you, sir.
So cardboard brown is what we should look for.
Light cardboard brown. That's a good burn. But, you know, when we're talking combinations, now, don't run out there tomorrow and put in, well, he said put in these spark plugs and change this and do that. You have to put the whole combination in. You can't just put half of it in. You put half of it in, you're going to have a problem. If you're listening to somebody else, you're going to have a problem. The combination that I give you with a Mad Dog Series equipment, put it in. Go to the start line. I want to see a half track pass on one stage. How did it look? That's where you let the big brain take over. How did it feel to your butt? Was it pulling good? Okay, yes, it's pulling good. Great. Service your car, bring it around, give me a full 8-mile pass. It should pull hard all the way through the lights. All right. Everything's good there. When we go back up for the next pass, we're going to do the first stage. We're leaving it on. We're going to do a 330 pass with one stage and the other first and second stage running to half track. If everything's good there, on the next pass, now we're talking 4 passes on a brand new, I want you to go to the other end. And that whole combination will work so well together that car is going to pull all the way out. Now, you may say, well, I need a little horsepower, more horsepower on the big end of the track. Hey, great. That's what we make jets for. And all we do is our jetting setup is set up, so like I said, 3 to 4 jet spread. So we're running a 73 nitrous, 70 fuel. We're going to go to a 76, 73. 78, 76. We're working our way up the ladder. Nobody should ever go out there with the biggest jet you can put in a combination. And, well, I'm going to go see what it does. Well, when you find out what it does, it's probably too late to do anything about it. You can always work your way up a combination. But if you go out there and light a stick of dynamite and see if you can outrun it, not good. Back to you, sir.
Why are you laughing, Mr. Carr?
Because that's
talk to me, Papa Bear.
Before. I knew about the Nigel. I never had a backfire or anything like that. What I'm working on now is how soon can I get three stages on? And the last time we ran the Nigel, the car was running the way it should have been running. We left on 250, brought in 350 at 040, brought in 300 at 080. We had all three stages on at 080. Car flew down the track. Yeah.
Yeah. When you're set up,
but
when,
we never
used
when
the combination is right.
Yeah, we never used the full stage yet. But also,
have you ever
we
needed
a problem here. And I was going to ask Ronnie about this. We planning on testing, checking this out. We've been pulling luncheon timing out. And when we did that, the least amount of luncheon time we pulled out was 6 degrees. I'm not sure how soon he took it back out. I mean, he put it back in, but we were pulling 6 degree luncheon time, anywhere from 6 to 8, depending on the track. Plus, depending on the amount of nitrogen, we were pulling anywhere from 4.75 to 5.5, depending on how much nitrogen we are putting in the motor.
Well, I thought you good. I tell you.
Yeah.
I tell
hey,
you. Papa Bear's been listening.
I got the motor. The motor is being bolted on the dyno. I just took the gas out and the headers and the plugs and everything. And the guy's supposed to call me as soon as he get everything hooked up. And we're going to go through the dyno. And after that, it's going in the car. And what we looking forward to this season is no luncheon time.
Uh-oh.
Well, like I say, make sure if you're doing a dyno on your motor, make sure that they pay attention and write down what jets they take out of your carburetor. And just because they put bigger jets in it, don't mean that that's the jet you're going to run. Because you're going to have to go back to getting the carburetor right, put those jets back in, and make it happen.
Right. What happened is I got a booklet that came with the motor from Gene Fulton, and he's got in there how much timing to pull out for each stage, and that's pretty well what we've been going by.
Right. But, you know, we worked on getting your carburetor right, and then once we did that, you didn't have any, you know, we got the whole combination where it should be.
Oh, yeah.
And
we went through the whole thing.
I mean, my dog saw a cat. And like I say, that way you don't hurt stuff. It's keeping that pressure off of the cylinder walls and off the head is what is going to make you live.
Mm-hmm.
Back to you.
I had one problem with nitrous, and that was back in the past when someone talked my – we normally run anywhere from 950 to 975 pressure in the nitrous tank. That's the pressure we use. We were told, my son was told to push it down to 650 pounds of pressure because if he didn't, he wouldn't be able to go down the track that day. I didn't know why he was pushing because I was on the opposite side letting the, opening the door, getting the smoke out of the car. He pushed it down. He went down the track. When the third stage come on, the car popped, made a popping sound. There was no explosion like a nitrous explosion. It just popped. And then he said, well, something must have went wrong with the third stage. We're going to make a second pass and use two stages. We did that, and it popped on the second stage. Then we made a motor pass, and it popped. Then I pulled the motor out of the car, and I was told that we probably lift the ring latch, and that's what it was, because the nitrous pressure in the tank was too low.
Well, you know, 600 is way too low. if we do our combination setup at 950, now, you got to keep track of the air also. I'm kind of watching Gainesville on TV right now. And yesterday, the corrected altitude at Gainesville was minus 1,380 feet. Now, you go to the start line, and it has run away from you that much. What's the easiest thing to do to make a good run? Drop your bottle pressure. Put some ice on your bottle. Make you an ice pillow. Soak it in and put it on your bottle. Pull that bottle pressure down to 850. All right?
Mm-hmm.
You'll go out there and you'll make a pass just as pretty as you want. Now, let's say the air gets terrible. It gets up to 2,000, 3,000 foot. What do we do now? Raise your bottle pressure. 1,000, 1,050. Hey,
wow.
Now we're putting altitude back in the motor.
Right.
Another correction. You go out there, and you're watching the starting line, and, boy, the starting line sucks. Nobody's leaving the starting line. In the Mad Dog system, there's another line that comes in there with a fitting. What do? You take your nitrous line loose on your first stage at the solenoid, install this line, make that line longer, go to the starting line. You're still going to be making the same horsepower, but you reduce the torque. So the car is going to drive out. It's not going to try to knock the tires off.
So when you raise and lower the bottle pressure, what you're doing is compensating for the air that the engine is going to take
right.
in.
We're leaving the fuel pressure alone. Yeah. We're changing the bottle pressure. That's all we're doing to compensate for the air being really good or really horrible. But you have to keep track of the corrected altitude in your run book so you can go back and, okay, this minus 1,300 foot. We were running this and this, and we ran 800, 850 pounds of bottle pressure. Papa Dog, Pop Bear, give me 850 pounds of pressure. You're ready to go. But, it's easy enough to keep track of that information. There's several programs that you can download on your phone that are free that you can just touch it up, and it gives you all the information you want instantly on the starting line. So, NOAA Weather is a really good one, especially since they've changed the NOAA radio programs. They're giving you grains of water. They're giving you corrected altitudes. They're giving you all kind of stuff on NOAA Weather. But they're giving you all the information for where you're at, and you can take these other programs and put that information in those programs, and it'll give you corrected altitudes and everything. So, and those things, those programs are free. So definitely run those down and listen to them.
So when a person up in the Midwest, say some of the races here in the Midwest, go to the track and the car's running good every weekend, running good. They leave the north and go to Florida, and they wonder, oh, my car ain't running right.
Yeah.
Good example.
Two totally different altitudes.
Mm-hmm.
And
the air density in the north versus the air density in the south.
Right. Okay. Who's got a question?
All right. Anybody got a question to ask Big Ernie? Hit the one button. And I know how some people don't have a question right now, but as soon as they get to working on their car, then all kind of questions pop up, and then it's too late to ask because they're already gone then. But
here's the deal. The deal is there are no stupid questions. If you've got a question,
right.
I don't care what that question's about. You call me 1-800-648-7687. Okay, to make that easy, it's 1-800-NITROUS, NITROUS. That's my phone number. Ask me. I'm not going to bite your head off. I will keep you on the phone probably a lot longer than you want to, but I'll give you the information so you will know what we're talking about, and you will know more than the guy that's trying to put a tune-up in your car, and never take your tune-up from the guy that's next to you putting pistons in his car. I mean, he just took the pistons out of his car. Why do you want to run his tune-up? Yeah,
what did
but he
you
was
say
fast.
That number was, Ernie?
1-800-NITROUS.
Give me the numbers.
1-800-648-7687. 1-800-NITROUS.
Hey, honey, I'm still running that Renegade gas that you hit me to.
Good.
I'm checking on
Renegade
VP. The cheapest I could get VP was $130 for 5 gallon, and it's supposed to go up tomorrow. But I'm still running the Renegade.
Yeah.
It's a lot cheaper. You hit me to that, and I've been running everything.
I was a distributor for VP Fuels. So I'm still on their, per se, mailing list. And back like last October, they emailed me a letter. Now, we're talking about before it's Christmas. They emailed me a letter that they had already set in place their price increases for next year. They said that
wow.
The first of the year, they were going up about 18%. And, yes, they did. And then about March 1st of April, they're going to have another increase. And, yes, they are. They, in that letter, it said by the end of the year that VP Fuels could exceed 100% price increase.
Wow.
Now, that's not me coming up with stuff. That's the information they emailed to me. They knew what they were going to do back then. They're just playing a game. Now, yes, Renegade
mm-hmm.
has gone up some because the base materials have gone up, but nowhere near what VP is saying they're doing and what they're already predicting they're going to do.
Tuesday, I got 7 gallon of Renegade for $110, 7 gallon.
Okay.
What octane is that?
What octane is that, Carter?
120.
That's the extreme. That's the 120.
Yeah.
That's
my 118 NOS is $95 for 5 gallons.
Whose fuel?
Dragon Race fuel.
No, I'm not familiar with that one. As far as pricing, I'm used to is the VP and the Renegade. There's a bunch of fuel manufacturers out there that blend their own fuels. I don't necessarily work for them because I don't know their specifics to give a race or a head-to-head comparison. Not saying that they're bad or anything. They may be some of the best. But,
well, the gravity on...
No.
Everything we've tested on the Dragon fuel for the 118 NOS and the 114 and their 110 is almost identical to VP's gravity on their fuel. And the tune-ups have been dead on from one fuel to the other, so they're pretty damn close.
Well, we've made a pass on a 706, one of our test motors, and drained it with VP, drained the fuel without touching anything else. Poured in the Renegade, cranked it up, got it all out of the carburetor, went to the starting line, and we went 1 mile an hour faster. Now, was that because of the fuel? No. That was, 1 mile an hour doesn't mean anything. That's did the tire
right
spin a little bit. But the tune-ups, when they both put together, the Renegade tune-up looked a little cleaner. It didn't have that greasy look in it, and like I said, we became a Renegade distributor. So I know how good it is, and I stay on top of them. And then if I have any problems, I can call them direct, whether I call the master distributor or I call the factory. I can promise you that they'll answer my call.
I've been running
back to you, sir.
Since you hit me to it. I've been running 5 or 6 years. You told me about it. A lot cheaper.
Yeah. Now, one thing about fuel, when you're storing your fuel, whether it's a 5-gallon pail, a fuel jug, 55-gallon drum, put two boards down under, well, probably a pail, you don't need two boards, just one board. Put it down on a board so air can get underneath it, and that way it will stop condensation inside the pail or inside the drum. 55-gallon drums are real bad about sucking in or wicking moisture into them. If you've ever been around a drum in a summer day, in the morning it's cool, no problem. About 10 o'clock you hear this big boom. That's the pressure coming up in that drum with the additives trying to vaporize, and it's building up pressure in the drum. You undo the top of it, you hear that, whew, that's pressure buildup in the drum. That's the aromatics bleeding off, and you're losing some of the concentration. So keep that board underneath your storage area. Keep it from wicking water, and it'll keep the pressure under control also. Back to you.
Okay. So when you keep your fuel in your 5-gallon barrels inside your trailer, do you still have to put a board on it, or is the trailer itself good enough?
No, I'd like to see a board underneath your fuel at all times. The trailer can get hot. I've been at some of these drag strips, went out there and shot the track, come back in, and it's like, okay, I'm just going to shoot the side of this trailer and see what the difference was. Shot a black trailer, and it was 156 degrees skin temperature. Shot a white trailer, it was 121 degrees skin temperature. So that heat on the outside is going to go into the inside, and that's going to affect your fuel, your nitrous pressures, everything. So the lighter the trailer, the better you are. It has more reflective surface, and it doesn't get as hot. So I know everybody doesn't want white trailers, but understand with the black trailer, even if you insulate it, all you're doing is making an oven unless you got air conditioning running. Back to you, sir.
So they told us from when we was in school, a darker material absorb light, and a lighter material reflects light.
Correct. That's really why silver works so good at reflecting heat. It reflects it away from the substance. It gives you that extra cushion of insulation. But I say in school, you also learn you can't compress the liquid. And that's where your combination comes in, that you don't have liquid in your cylinder. Back to you.
You want to have that mist, the vapors.
Right. You want everything in that cylinder atomized.
Yep, atomized vapor. Do you have a set timing? Do you take out per 50, per 100?
You're normally, depending on here, the combination, you're looking at about 3 degrees per 100. People can get overzealous on timing and pull out too much timing. And that just makes the cylinders run rich. It pulls power out of the cylinder. And they try to tune the nitrous to bring it around to where it'll try to run again, and they end up hurting the cylinders.
Yeah, I know
a
lot of guys.
Don't get too aggressive on your timing.
Yeah, I know a lot of guys will take a boatload of timing out to get it to leave and then bring the timing back in. And
it's not needed. If you're pulling timing out, you're killing torque. That's what that does. Pulling out an abundance of starting line power, here again, if you have phased your distributor and you set the first stage to where the car can handle it, then once the car is in motion, like say, let's say a car weighs 3,200 pounds. On the starting line, that is all dead weight, static weight on the tires. So when you hit it, you've got to get it to move. That's where your torque comes in. Now, once it starts rolling, half a second out, bring on the second stage, because now the second stage does not see 3,200 pounds. It sees about 500 to 1,000 pounds. So it's got all this extra power to accelerate that weight. If you're pulling timing out and then trying to ramp it back in, you're screwing up your starting line. Trying to control, I guess, tire speed on the starting line. If you set your equipment right, the car will want you to put as much nitrous on the starting line as the combination, your wheels and tires and gears, can hold. Okay, let's say it's 175, 200 horsepower. Okay, great. That's just to get us to launch. Half a second out, we're going to put in another 200 to 300 horsepower, and now you're going to accelerate because all the load is off the running gear. Back to you.
The line between the solenoid and the plate, the longer the line, the lighter the hit.
The softer the hit.
The softer the hit. The more gradual, or however you want to put it.
Right. And conversely, the shorter that line is, the more aggressive it gets. So if you moved our solenoids all the way to the plate, it's become going to be so violent, it's going to try to rip the asphalt off the track. And that's when you start climbing the ring gear and going straight up. And then you start, instead of paying attention to the combination, you go, well, I got to control this. We got to take out timing. No. You just need to move that solenoid away from the plate.
What length differences do you use? Do you, like, a 2-inch longer, 4-inch longer? I mean, if you're running a 6-inch line and you need to soften it up, do you go to an 8 or a 10? I mean, does it actually feel the difference?
On our Mad Dog equipment, it comes with 1-foot lines on both sides of the nitrous. Now, the kit comes with an additional line of about roughly 6 inches. So as we go out there and we look at the start line, now you can put, do not exceed 24 inches, because then everything just gets lazy and sloppy. The fuel starts getting in before everything else does. So 6 inches makes a tremendous difference in the way that it acts on the start line.
Okay. In my world, the starting line is always shit. I'm a no prep racer. So
okay, but see,
backwards racing,
you're the
no prep.
But see, you're the guy that can use the most with the Mad Dog 2-stage, because we're not trying to blow it off the starting line. We just want it to leave good. And these guys that are progressing are killing the hell out of their torque. And they're trying to drive out and just get faster. If I can leave the starting line with 175 horsepower with full torque and leave, I'll accelerate the guy that's running 175 or 250 horsepower, leaving the starting line, pulling out time and doing all this other crazy, progressing and all this other crazy stuff. Make the car work with what you've got. And then you can add more to it. And also you can adjust how much power you're making downrange by changing those lengths. So if you have to kill a starting line a little bit, but out there at 330, the track is terribly greasy. Okay, put a 6-inch or 12-inch in that one also. Now when it comes in, instead of getting that big shock to the tires, it just pushes harder.
Maintaining the torque.
You saying put between the first and second stage, you want your smallest of your two on stage one and your biggest hit or increase on stage two?
Absolutely. That way you're leaving with what their car and starting line can handle. And like I say, people try to do it with progressors and all this other stuff, and some guys are getting by with it. A progressor, I'm a refrigeration engineer by trade. My air conditioning refrigeration company is 55 years old. So when I started designing the nitrous equipment, I started designing it as a refrigeration system. I wanted full maximum flow with no bubbles in the refrigerant lines, which was your nitrous lines. I put sight glasses in the nitrous line so I could watch what happened. And we started developing progressors back in late 80s, and we started finding out that we tried to do that, and we started to have problems. And what happens is, as you pulse a solenoid, it puts a burst of nitrous out there, and it's liquid nitrous. Well, in that, when that solenoid shuts off, it leaves a gap between that first burst and the next one. So when you see that pop, 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 each one of those is a little burst of nitrous. And the pressure differential, since it's not being a continuous pressure, causes that burst to flash off to gas bubbles. And then it causes the next one to flash off, and then the next one to flash off. And a bubble takes up 1,500 times the room as liquid. So you want to keep the liquid solid all the way to the jet. Let the jet be your expansion point. Back to you.
Gotcha. I got you. Because when it comes out that jet, that's when you want it to spray that mist, and your fuel inside the cylinders burn better when you got that mist and not just liquid.
Right. It takes 275 pounds of nitrous per hour to make 100 horsepower. It takes 52 pounds of fuel per hour to make 100 horsepower. And it takes 100 pounds of alcohol per hour to make 100 horsepower. So you're after basically a 5-to-1 ratio on gasoline and a 2.5-to-1 ratio on alcohol. Alcohol, you have to run twice as much alcohol to make the same amount of power that you do on gasoline. So that's the whole thing. It's a scientific equation. You keep that equation right. And if you're running AFRs, you want your AFRs on a nitrous motor to be 10.8 to 11.2, no leaner than that. And if you're not running 8 AFRs and recording it, you're getting a general AFR reading. That really means nothing, because if you're reading a 10.8, okay, is that 10.8 on the first cylinder, 1357, or is it, where is it coming from? Because every cylinder may be burning different. So you may have a lean cylinder and a really rich cylinder and looking at almost a perfect AFR. But that doesn't mean you've got a good AFR. So be careful trying to tune your car unless you're able to send AFR on each cylinder. Back to you, sir.
Now, that AFR, break that down to the people what the AFR stands for.
Okay. AFR is air-fuel ratio. That's the amount of air that you have basically coming out, air and fuel coming out your exhaust. And, the thing, I think perfect combustion is supposed to be 14.7. You never want to get close to perfect combustion because that will start burning up your pistons really, really quick. Because you only want 10.8 to 11.2.
You only want the 14.7 in your everyday car.
Even in your everyday car, today's fuel injected car will probably be 12.3, 12.5. You only want to get those into that top end range. You start using too much of your injectors, and then you end up burning up your motor. Now, ratios on your injectors, if you take that 52 pounds per hour and then break it down into horsepower and how much horsepower you're making, and you can take that 52 pounds per hour and tell exactly where your injectors need to be, and you never want to run more than 85% duty cycle on your injectors. That's getting
you don't want more than okay. You say you don't want more, never want more than 85%.
Right, because if you get more than 85% and then the computer tries to correct, it's going to make you go lean. You know, okay. That means it, if you're getting to that point where you're having to go past that 85, you need bigger injectors, maybe one step up. Don't go from a 19 to a 70. Now you're going to be bass backwards. So
uh-huh.
You might step up a little bit and the next injector size and be spot on. Thank you, sir.
Okay. I got another. This is a text that somebody. Go ahead, Rick.
Ernie, if somebody told you the PPH that they're putting in their motor, would you be able to tell what the horsepower up setting is?
Well, the pounds per hour, it takes 275 pounds per hour to make 100 horsepower. Now, you got to remember, horsepower is rated per hour, horsepower. Now, if you took down and divided your 275 pounds per hour, divided by 60, then divided by 60, that tells you how much nitrous it takes per second to make that horsepower. And you take it, how much nitrous you use per second over your ET, ruling out your purge, and that's going to tell you how much nitrous you used in that pass. Normally in that pass, a good running car is going to probably use maybe 2.5 to 3 pounds of nitrous, and in a pass, and that's the purge and the pass out of each bottle. If you're running a lot of nitrous,
that's got to be based on what your tune is, right?
Exactly, because the bigger the jet you have, the more you're going to use. But the ratio is always going to be 275 pounds per hour, always, to make 100 horsepower. Ditch 2 pounds of fuel, 275 pounds of nitrous is 100 horsepower. And by checking your bottle weight before you put the bottle in the car, weigh it, write it in your run book, make the pass, take it out, weigh it, put it in your run book. How much did you use on that pass? Put that bottle back in your rack. Get a new bottle. The fastest pass on a bottle is always the first pass. So if you've got enough bottles, you always want to keep your bottles in order. And 1A, 2A, so that when you come back out the next time, you always put the 2A in the 2 spot and the 2 in the 2A spot. Because we've used more out of the first one than we did the second one, so we're going to swap them. And the next time we're going to have that fuller bottle in the lead position and that emptier bottle in the second position, and the car will run faster. You're not going to fall off as much because you've got more volume in the bottle.
So the volume in the bottle is almost as important as the pressure.
Yes, because you're dealing with a chamber, and the more you use out of that bottle, the larger that chamber becomes. And the larger the chamber becomes, the less it is reactive to the volume being pulled out. So your pressure is going to fall off faster. The first pass is always the best pass. So if you're grudge racing somebody, okay, I'm going to change nitrous bottles, and never put a bottle in your car that you don't weigh. So I have seen so many racers grab a bottle and put it in, go to the starting line, and it be empty. Because the driver didn't put the bottle in. He doesn't know what it weighed. And the guy that blessed your crew that's trying to help you, he didn't mean it, but he doesn't know what it weighs. You need to have a sequence of operation around your race car to where everybody knows what they're to do, and you can look at that scale and know exactly where your bottle is. Back to you.
Now, here on the Shake and Bake Show, we've always talked about checklist. Now you just added some more to the checklist, Ernie. Because with the balls,
everything you do
with
on
the balls
your,
in the trailer,
everything you do, right? Everything you do on your race car should be written down
mm-hmm.
in the proper sequence.
Right.
That's first, all right? You know, we're going to check the valves. Okay, that's first. Number two, I'm going to check, while I'm there checking the valves, I'm going to pull the cap on my master cylinder and make sure my brake fluid is full. Can I tell you how many people mm-hmm. never check their brakes, and then they go make a pass, and they find out how hard pine trees are. And just go down with what you do, the front driver's side tire, rear driver, passenger, over. Make sure you have that sequence so everybody's checking those. And check your tires with the same gauge. Don't have two people checking your tires. Those two gauges may not read the same. So always use one gauge. Put it up. And don't go use somebody else's gauge to check your tires. No, your gauge is what you're used to. Their gauge might be what they're working with, but that actually may be a higher or a lower pressure. When is the last time
your
gauge
was
calibrated?
And you don't know how many times they threw it, dropped it, stepped on it compared to yours.
Well, one of the worst things to do is I've seen people check their tire pressure then throw the gauge inside the race car. Do you know what harmonics a race car are? Oh, my God. You know, and then they'll leave it in the car when they put it in the trailer and they drive 600 miles to get somewhere. More damage is done to a race car in the trailer than anywhere else on the racetrack.
I can believe that.
Back to you.
I can believe that.
I just got one more question for you, Ernie.
Go ahead.
In my world, I use a progressor. Now, you said you don't like them, and I get why. I understand the air bubbles and all that. I've been spraying this shit since early 90s, so I've learned a lot talking to a lot of different people. But if I have to use a progressor, the shorter the time on the progressor, the better.
Absolutely. But now, if we can take that progressor out of the equation and increase the lines to give you a consistent leave every time, but you're leaving with the torque and power that we're working with, and we're not getting that stutter, wouldn't that be better?
Well, yeah. I mean, all that's ideal. But when you...
Right.
are on the 28-10-5 tire, and
right.
you are on some of the sketchiest surfaces you've ever seen in your life, even bringing the second kit on, for as hard as I spray my car, unless you put a 6-foot line on that thing, it's going to hit it too hard out on most of these surfaces.
I tell you what, why don't you give me a call tomorrow during the day, and me and you can sit down and discuss. We'll look at your combination versus what I look at and see where we cross legs at.
I'm down for that.
Like I say, you call me. I'm there. Be more than happy to work with you. And if you've got a problem or had a problem, that's what I'm there for.
Well, and I did just update to a 20-year-old new technology plate too. So there's a few things I'm changing.
Okay, now there's the 20-year-old technology of the two-stage plate, right, that is a crossbar plate, and then there's the Mad Dog two-stage. The if you're working with an NOS or some of those types of systems, Elderbrock NOS and a couple of the other ones, the spray bars in their plates, the outside diameter is 125 thousandths. You have a 25 thousandths wall. So you're going to take 125 less 50, 25 for each side of the wall, off of the 125.
Right.
The spray bar itself has only got an inside diameter of 75,000. And if you look at the spray bars, do not line up with the fittings. So your solenoid is spraying in, and it's spraying hitting the back side of the plate, hitting the top side of the plate, turning and going in the inside the spray bars. Major agitation. If you're running a crossbar plate, the front-to-back spray bar is working really good. You turn on the left-to-right spray bar, it's spraying down in there, but what it is doing is actually chopping the charge into the plenum, into a square, and the fuel starts circulating underneath the carburetor. Now, with our Mad Dog series, our spray bars are 187 thousandths. With 50,000, with 25,000 wall, gives us 145,000 free flow area, and the fittings on our spray bars are soldered to the tube itself, straight in, no agitation, no turns. Theoretically, if you get above about 75 jet on some of the other systems, you have flowed as far as the plate can handle, because the orifice to the spray bar is only 75.
Well, there are no spray bars or crossbars on my plate.
Well, all of our spray bars are front to back. I know, hey, I might be able to help you. You might go, hell, I'll try that one time. But
I got your number. I will definitely
okay.
be reaching out tomorrow. What's the best time
okay.
to get a hold of you?
Anything past 9 o'clock in the morning.
what time is it where you're at now?
Same as yours, Rich. Same as yours.
10:10.
Okay. Just making sure.
That's still Eastern Standard Time.
Okay. Yeah, I should have said that, Eastern Standard. So I messed up tonight because they changed the time on me, and of course I didn't change my clock. So, Eastern Standard Time. Well, Shake, I don't want to take up your whole show, and I know I'm doing it, but guys, if I can help you,
they loving it.
If I can help you, if I can give you information, if you need equipment, give me a call. I'll be more than happy to build equipment for you. We build more custom equipment probably than every other manufacturer out there. We do not have cookie cutter systems. When you get a kit from us, first thing we want to know is your nitrous lines, how far the bottle is to your, if you're running a quarter turn valve, and how close to the back of your motor is. Because when you get the kit, we cut those lines to that length. So when you get them out of the kit, you don't have 12 foot of line that you got to roll up. They're already to the right size. On our two stage Mad Dog plate systems, they come put together. We fold them up like a taco in the box. When you get it and you open up the box, just lift the whole assembly out, lay it out. Every fitting is in the right place. It already has the pipe dope on it. The only thing we do not do is tighten the fittings, because you may have to move a fitting during the installation. So we don't tighten up those fittings. Tighten them up when you get them, and you're ready to go. And then, like I said, you give me a call, and I become part of your team. I will. You on the weekend, you're going to a race. Let me know if you're doing something. You're testing a tuning. Let me know. I'll be more than happy to talk to you about it. So, CompuCar Nitrous Oxide Systems. 1-800-648-7687. 1-800-NITROUS. Back to you, Shake.
That's what I like about you, Ernie. You're willing to talk to them and explain to them what they may need some help at. I got one caller that's been texting the hell out of me. He wants to know if you got race fuel in a container the first part of the year, how long can it sit in there, and how long will it be good for next year? Can you reuse it next year?
If the container has been, now let's talk about a 5 gallon pail. If you've opened that 5 gallon pail last September, October, You've kept the top on it. You've kept it clean. Let's use that 5-gallon pail for more of the rough testing and checking out stuff. Unless you've got a hygrometer where you can check specific gravity, you don't know what type of contaminants and everything or how cold it's been, how much water is condensed in it, stuff like that. If you keep a board underneath your pails, you're not going to have that problem because you're going to have the ventilation underneath your tank. In the wintertime, when you're putting your car up, you need to drain your fuel cell. Take 1 gallon of that fuel, mix it up with some good 2-stroke oil, shake it up, pour it back in the fuel cell, turn on your fuel pump, let it run through the fuel pump, crank the car up. Let that fuel get up through the fuel system, through the fuel pump, up to the carburetor, in the carburetor, and it's going to get into the motor. It's kind of sealing up your motor. First of the year that we're getting to now, you drain out what fuel you put in there, put it up, use it for your chainsaw, 2-stroke, whatever, it works great. Put new fuel in there, turn your pump on, crank it up, let it flush all that stuff out, and what you've done there is you've stopped the inside of your fuel lines from rotting. You do not get the residue buildup inside the fuel lines in the carburetor. The seals in the fuel pump do not dry out and do not start leaking. You keep everything lubricated, and everything will be perfect.
Ooh.
Your cylinders won't have rust on them. Everything's going to be pretty. And you take your carburetor apart, you look in there, no residue, no trash.
And now, if you didn't drain your tank at the end of the, for a year and had gas in it, what should I do? What happened is I broke my motor, and I had gas in it, and I didn't drain it, and it had been sitting for about a year.
You use it to crank your car up and to warm it up, and then once you do that, drain your tank completely and put good fuel in there, and the only thing you're going to use that fuel for is cranking up every now and then at your shop and just to check the motor out. You're not going to race with that fuel. As far as you're concerned, it's too old.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Good.
Guys, if I can help
good
you,
report.
Let me know. Shake, I love you.
All right.
Guys, y'all be safe out there. Love you. Mean it. Just give me a call. We'll talk to you later.
All right, big man. Appreciate
Bye.
You.
Bye.
All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that was Big Ernie with his very enthused information that we need so much, because I know it's going to be people on this show and people listening is going to forget to change that fuel and drain that fuel out. But Ernie gave us some good tips. He said get you some 2-cycle oil mixed with that fuel that you drained out of there. And the reason why he said that is because that oil lubricates the system, lubricates the pump, lubricates the lines, lubricates your carburetor. And if you ever had gas sitting inside of an engine, carburetor, and fuel pump over a year, you'll find out real quickly how bad it messes it up. And then you wonder the next year, oh, man, I wasn't having this problem last year when I set the car up. Now the carburetor is acting all funny. Now you notice it's flooding a lot. Do what he asked you to do. When Ernie mentioned when you buy a system from him, he's going to be there for you like you married him. All he wants you to do is once he send you that equipment, put it on your car. Once you got it on there, give him a call so he can tell you what next step to do. Because if you go out there and do something wrong, you tend to mess up your car, you mess up your carburetor, mess up your engine. So please, always call him back up and say, okay, Ernie, what's my next step? He's the man to go to. Any other company out there you can call, they'll say you're a follow-up, and then you won't hear from them no more ever again. They want you to mess up. They don't care about you messing up. Because if you mess up their carburetor, guess what? You're going to call them back for another one. and they're going to tell you, oh, we got this 1300 cc dominator we can put on there, but you just got a 1200. But Ernie's going to talk with you and tell you where your problem's at, and I appreciate him, and I'll have him on this show anytime as much as I want. If y'all have some questions, he gave you his number, 1-800-NITROUS. Call him, and we'll have Ernie on the show again real soon, because his information is priceless. Love the brother. Somebody that take our time and give us information like that, bro, you gotta hand it to him. A lot of these other companies ain't going to do it. They don't care. Once they get your money, you on your own. Okay. With that being said, I Mr. Carter, I know you've been dealing with him from what I heard. You've been dealing with him for a while, so I know for a fact it's worked for you. And I've been knowing Ernie for quite a few years too, but I've been to his shop, and the brother got a good system going on. He knows what he's talking about. And I need somebody like that in my corner.
You can call him anytime. He'd be glad to help you in any way he can.
Sure will. Matter of fact, a brother called me the other day, needed to talk to Big Ernie. And I piped him in with him. And Big Ernie was Johnny on the spot to help him. I ain't going to call no names, but Ernie, it's somebody that I would highly recommend if they need some information about nitrous tuning. The man knows what he's talking about.
I'm running some Ernie filler noise, and I had a motor out sold that he did the complete intake.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been dealing with him for quite a while. Yeah.
Okay.
You don't mind helping anybody, whether you running CompuCar, Nigers, whoever. It doesn't matter. He will help you any way he can.
Mm-hmm. Yep, so he has – oh, I forgot to talk to Ernie and tell him about some other stuff he got. Ernie's got the Mad Dog system that he say he named after Willie Dog. He's got a sneaky, sort of like a sneaky peek system that you can buy from Summit, but he's got his own system that he sells to a lot of the law enforcement officers. And the sneaky peek system, they just slap on the intake and wire it up, and the law enforcement puts it on their cars. So you can be out somewhere, and next thing you know, that cop ain't never catch up with me. That's wrong. Look in the mirror, he's on your ass. Because he probably got that sneaky peek system on him. So, trust me, Ernie got some stuff for you when it comes to nitrous. And he builds it in-house. Ooh. Well, you got to get credit what credit's due. Until I find somebody that can prove me otherwise. Ernie's the man.
Yep.
Well, Mr. Carter, from what you tell me, it won't be long. You have your baby back in lockdown in your car.
Yeah, that's what I'm planning on doing. Planning on being ready for the first races, or first local races, 131. Mid-Michigan. In fact, I think Mid-Michigan, the first one, I'm going to probably go there and test in 131. Plus, Mile and Dragway going to be open this season. So I'm going to be hitting them all.
Yep.
I ain't missing Spirit races. I'll be at all of them. My son be commentating at them. And driving my car.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. A little Carter. Mr. Carter, when I remember you came on the show once before and you said something about you was about to get out of the racing business, you know, that hurted me. I hate to see you leave. stick around because I have so much fun and I make enough money off of your car running down that track. So please stick around as long as you can.
I am. I'm going to stick around as long as I can. Coming out with a new motor engine. I ain't decided on no date or nothing. One of the reasons I had mentioned that because my son also bought a race car a couple of years ago, and I felt that maybe we didn't need two cars. But I got to hang in there. I ain't ready to go nowhere. I did it once before. That's how I ended up with the Mustang. Got rid of the prosecutor.
Yeah, I remember that.
From GM. Called myself getting out of racing and realized I couldn't. And I had to go out and buy another car, and I wish I had kept the one I had.
Hmm. Yep, yeah. I wish you had it too. That prosecutor.
Yep. Running with the big boys at Maryland on the first Friday. Quick eight. I was one of them for 7 years in a row.
Did you now?
Yep. My son jumped in the car, went, look how to in the car at 15. He was running some of the guys that run in professionals now. Sloan Brothers.
Yeah.
Dietrich and all the big name guys. Some of them moved Dietrich. Up. Yeah. In fact, I even ran and I outlawed 10-5 with the guy that hold the record at the race this past weekend. The white Camaro that went to 349 Lee.
Uh-huh.
He used to run at Milan, and I lost 10-5 because I went from running in the quick eight to I lost 10-5. What happened was, guys, as years passed, I get faster and faster in new cars. Got so that I was number seven, number eight, bag up qualified, so I went to Outlaw 10-5. Only difference about Outlaw 10-5, I had to weigh 2,750 pounds, and I had a 2,350-pound car. It was just too much weight to put in there. They told me I could run the class without nitrous. But if I used nitrous, I had to weigh 2,750 pounds. Without nitrous, I could run it at 24. So I had a small amount of weight, and I was able to run, and I was number one qualified for a couple of seasons, and then I got rid of the car when I retired.
Mr. Carter, do you think that's really fair when they say you got to weigh so much and put this in the car to qualify for that? You actually think that's fair? Is that just...
I guess found another guy weighed 2,800 pounds. You got the advantage of him because it's different than the weight. Weight can get you anywhere from 8 to 1/10 faster on 100 pound of weight.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's fair, what they did. And I was the first chassis car. And Outlaw 10-5, they had been running mostly back-ass-type cars. They didn't have any full two-chassis cars in Outlaw 10-5 at Milan. I was the first two-chassis car they let into Outlaw 10-5. And after that, they had several guys that was running in the quick eight when they found out they were letting two-chassis cars get in Outlaw 10-5. Next thing you know, they push all the back-half cars out of Outlaw 10-5. They're going to be running this season. You won't have hardly a back-half car in there. I'm not sure, but just about all of them chassis cars now. Guys, Carter, they hit you in Outlaw 10-5 with a chassis car? I'm getting out of the place bright. I was number seven qualified. I'm going to get in Outlaw 10-5. Yeah.
We did have somebody who was just about to hold their hand up, but they fell off.
You know what?
Yeah.
I was looking at the Gator National today. It was a time
that
Hal Martin and me went to the Gator National to run an NHRA Pro Stock.
You and Hal Martin?
Yeah, Hal Martin had just went from a Camaro
to a Chevy Monza with a small block. And I had bought his NHRA Pro Stock car turnkey. So we took both cars there. And we didn't qualify. So we left there and went to a local track somewhere. I don't even remember the name of it. But we went to another track on a Sunday and ran there. And the guy paid us to put on the show there. But I did make it to the Gators last year, but I didn't get to run in elimination. It was on this weekend.
What happened?
That's why I mentioned it. Well, either one of us didn't, we didn't qualify. I think my car wasn't leaked because of the, at the time, you have to have a certain year car at the time. What they did, told me that I wouldn't be able to run in elimination, but if I wanted to make the qualifying run, I could get in line and run the car. I did get in line and run the car, but I knew before I ran that I wasn't going to be able to run elimination.
Oh, so they just basically got let you get out there and do a test hit.
Yeah, that's what I did, the test hit. Hal Martin ran the qualifying run, and he didn't make it. I just made that one pass, and that was it, and loaded up, and we stayed there for 3 or 4 days. I remember the college there and all the kids, the pool. It was nice and warm. People in the pool 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And that was in March. Yeah, that was in March.
Now, where was this? Where was this at?
Gainesville, Florida. Gator National.
Gainesville, Florida. Okay.
Gator National. It was on TV. It just went off. It was on TV today, elimination. They just finished the race about a half hour ago. That's why I mentioned it, because this was the weekend for the Gator National.
Hold on 1 second. We got a caller coming in from 717. No, they somebody keep playing games, whatever it is. That's probably one of the most funky callers. But anyway, Mr. Carter, did you go to the Autorama this past weekend?
I didn't go to the Autorama this past weekend because I had a doctor appointment on a Thursday, and I was going through a test. I got dizzy and almost passed out, and they took me to the hospital, and I was in the hospital up until Saturday. In fact, they told me I had to stay to Sunday, but because on the Friday afternoon, they told me they had a couple more tests to take, and from 1 o'clock Friday afternoon until 4 o'clock Saturday evening, they hadn't taken those tests. And I told them, if y'all don't take those tests by Saturday afternoon, I'm walking out. They didn't take them. I walked out.
You walked out.
I had to sign some papers to leave, and I did. I wouldn't go stay for Sunday. First of all, I was back to normal. When I went in there, I was normal, and I was back to normal Friday afternoon. They kept me 2 days there, just giving me IV and checking my blood pressure, doing this and doing that. They ran about 5 or 6 different tests, and every doctor come in said that my test was a negative, and they didn't find nothing wrong. But it was all about money. That's what I thought.
Yeah, yeah, and so, I would be careful with going to them, because they'll if you stay in there long enough, they'll find something to lie about or say, oh, you got race car disease. They'll make up something.
Yeah.
And what do you know it, they got you. I'm got to the point where I don't the trust always been weak since I was a kid, because I wasn't even born in a hospital. But my trust for doctors was always weak, because they was always talking about they trying this. We're gonna do a heart transplant on a human with a monkey, and I'm like, you gonna take a monkey's heart and change it for a human's heart? They tried that. It didn't work. Well, of course not. The human body resisted the monkey heart. It seemed like all they were doing was practicing. And that's what they do, practice medicine. I just got a phone call the other day, a couple of days ago,
one of my older sisters, and it ain't looking good. She's had colon cancer for the past couple of years, and it ain't looking good. So I'm waiting on that phone call where I might have to book up out of here and go home. But these doctors have been had her in there doing this, running tests and doing this. They've done some stuff that I ain't never heard before, Mr. Carter.
Mm-hmm.
I know you can get radiation treatment by being in that big old round tube. Now they got a radiation pill that you just take. They did that on my sister. They got this thing where they put water in her blood because she was dehydrating. Well,
right.
If you put me in a tube and a microwave and dry me out, I would dehydrate too.
Okay.
So,
yeah.
And they giving her these pills for radiation, so that's drying you out. There's some things that they do that just don't make sense because I'm a mechanic. And what you work on, what you do to a car is almost the same, I said almost the same as the body. And when I hear them talking about they're going to do this and do that, some things just don't sit with me. Some stuff do, some stuff don't. But, she's dehydrating, and then they give her this thing where they stick water, they push water, fusion, I think they call it, where they put water inside of veins, blood vessels or whatever, to give her more liquids.
Right.
Then I got a stubborn sister that just don't like water. I mean, that bothered me. All my life I've been growing up with her and didn't know she didn't like water. Well, shucks, your body made of 75% of water. Why you do not like water, that's beyond me. But if it's something you need to grow and the body needs water to nourish, damn it, give it to it.
What you
going to do, stop eating food? Food is an essential, and you got to have food. So what? Oh, I don't like food. How you going to say, I don't like water?
You got
I don't
it.
Like
certain kind of food you might not like, but you got to eat food. You got to drink water.
Exactly.
I was saying.
Yeah.
A lot of people drink a lot of pop, but it's still liquid, and they might get away with it for a while, but sometime or another you need
until
to drink some water.
Yeah, until that high fructose corn syrup that's in all pop catch up with you. That's a man-made sugar.
Yeah, it happens.
And after you don't have water to dilute and rinse that stuff out, it's going to catch up with you real quick. I had to break off from drinking pops a lot because I was drinking pops traveling and stop at a gas station, get a case of pop, and I'm clucking as I go down the highway. And then when I get to where I'm going, I'm wondering why my side hurting. Duh.
But I tell you.
Kidneys overloading with sugar.
You know, when I take myself out of the hospital, I had my wife to come pick me up. And when she picked me up, I headed right to MGM.
Mm-hmm.
They told me, Miss Carter, you might not be able to drive for 6 months. Shit. Man. Bullshit. The only reason I got dizzy was the kind of test they was giving me with some ball running across and up and down, speeding up and slowing up, and all of a sudden things start spinning. Yeah. But I was over that within hours, and everything was back to normal. I had no business being in there no 3 days, and they was ordered me to be there four, and which was been on Sunday. And if I had to stay Sunday, they'd say, well, we couldn't get you to test it today because it's Sunday. You're going to have to stay till Monday. And what I did, I got out of there and made an appointment with my family doctor, and I go in tomorrow and see my family doctor, and they said that all that stuff, the test that they took could be on the computer. My doctor can pull it up and look at it, which was all negative.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the deal. I ain't had a problem since I left out of there. Didn't have one before I went in there until that happened.
Well, I got a buddy of mine. He's in the racing. He's out of Chicago. And he normally comes on here and tell everybody, you better get that colonoscopy. You better get that colonoscopy. And he usually come on here and preach to my fellas. I ain't seen him lately. But you know, when people have certain experiences, mm-hmm. it's good to pass on what you knowledgeable about to other people.
Right.
And I'm gonna have to give Big Mark a call one and see if I can catch up with him. But yeah, he usually comes on and tell everybody,
I got to give one check. I just this past week got my a prostate check, and what happened, the doctor said it was a little large, and they gave me some pills to try to shrink it and whatnot. And he told me mm-hmm. it's time for me to set up a colonoscopy test. So I'm going to be getting one did sometime in the future soon. I give one every 3 years.
Okay. Okay. Mr. Carter, I'm gonna wing this show down and get on up out of here. I ain't see nobody else with their hands up. No more questions. No more. Okay, we're gonna get on up out of here. I can't find Big Mark, but I was gonna have Big Mark come over here to the Autorama. I was gonna treat him, get him in free, and get him a hotel so he can sit and chill with us for a day. But I'll probably catch up with him later on next winter. But with that being said, people, we're gonna get on up out of here. I want to thank you for coming on, Mr. Carter. Thank our special guest, Big Ernie from CompuCar Nitro System. Man, every time he come on, boy, he got some information for the people. I hope they writing notes, taking notes, and taking this information down, because Big Ernie knows what he talks about, and he's been a big help to us all. So if he can be a help to you, call him, 1-800-NITRO. That's Big Ernie, CompuCar Nitro System. That being said, Mr. Carter, you got any one last words, and we're going to get on up out of here.
Okay, man. I'll be talking with you next week.
All right. Hey, you remember your Sam Burrell?
Yeah.
Sam Burrell and what's the other guy name? Macaroni?
Yeah.
Holler at them next week.
Okay. I'll holler at them. I just talked to Macaroni this afternoon. Yeah.
Did you?
He's got a new race car he's coming out with this season. I will tell him about the show and remind him to try to be on the show next Sunday at 8:30.
Okay, we'll be looking for him with that new car. We'll be at Milan or wherever. All right. Appreciate you, Mr. All Carter. Right. All right, we're going to get on up out of here. We want to thank everybody for tuning in. Had a good show. We're going to get up out of here, and we'll see y'all next week.